The show's an homage to myself.
selections from my mom called.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, your twice weekly chat and chatter show. We have call-in capability here in case you want to call in, 831-427-3772. Maybe getting an update on the smart meter resistance. Maybe getting an update from Southern California from Jennifer Yellowhorse, previously known as Jennifer Wagoner, long-term homeless activist, or long-time and long-term homeless activist. And, of course, a flash update on the the outcome of the appeal in the Norse Facer sing-song sidewalk citation case, which was heard today by two judges in Department 4, sorry, 3, at 4 o'clock. So stay tuned.
I woke up this morning and I turned on the news. It was a Sunday morning. They were sitting in the pews. The doctor's wife was in the choir. She was about to sing. She saw it all in front of her, and she heard that awful ring. In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. Dr. Tiller had a family, three daughters and a son. Two girls were both doctors who believed in what he'd done. They knew someone had to do something before they leave this world behind. If it wasn't them, then who would serve the cause of womankind? In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. This is not Afghanistan, it's the heartland, USA, where a girl has to wonder if she'll get acid in her face. Where they bomb the women's clinics because the preacher told them to. Where the man there on the TV told them that's what they should do. In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. In the name of God. In the name of God. We came to Canada a long time ago, but the Brits showed no mercy. We had to go. Our cities fell and we set sail from the shores of La Nouvelle-France out into the gale. In Louisiana we started again, fished and farmed, made a life here and then. We celebrated a new day, and we sang Laissez le bon temps brûler. Laissez le bon temps brûler. All we wanted was to be left alone on a patch of paradise that we could call our own. Fish the Gulf, dance and pray, but when the revolution came, we went and joined the fray. And when we came back from the awful fight, the Battle of Baton Rouge gave us nightmares at night. But we got the fiddles out to play, We sang Laissez le bon temps brûler. Laissez le bon temps brûler. We fished the seas, and when we came back, it was time for Fedodor and all the crawfish you could pack. La grande range monte memory that had long ago been traded for joie de vie. The great upheaval far in the past, now we've found a new world we all hoped would last. Cajun music there by the bay, laissez le bon temps brûler. Laissez le bon temps brûler. When the oil companies began to drill, we did our best to get along. We kept fishing still. It was hard, but we persevered. Brought our catch to market like we'd done for 200 years. Some went to Texas to work the oil. Most of us stayed here on this Cajun soil. We'd work the Gulf, come home and say, laissez le bon temps brûler. Laissez le bon temps brûler. We survived Katrina, so much more, but when the oil started gushing out on the ocean floor, I guess it's time to say goodbye. There's no life here for a fisherman when all the fish do is die. Maybe California is where I'll land. Heard there's still fish there beyond the golden sand. But I can only cry to hear some fools say, laissez le bon temps brûler. Laissez le bon temps.
And that was two from, actually the last two of the David Rovick's album Troubadour, People's History and Song, Laissez les bon temps brûler, which is, well, maybe it's not the last two. There's one more after this, Let the Good Times Roll, and that one is a song the notes describe it as the great upheaval. Let's see if we can get a little more clarity on that in the in the 18th century Acadian people fled eastern Canada after the French defeat in what became known as the French and Indian Wars, or the Seven Years' War. Many eventually ended up settling in Louisiana. Although geographically isolated in a part of the world that is not without its challenges, the people who became known as Cajun thrived in Louisiana, farming, and especially fishing the rich Mississippi Delta region and developing forms of music that have spread throughout the world. The Cajun people survived the original Grand Detainment, the relocation from Canada to Louisiana, and they have collectively survived many other challenges to their existence. The Battle of Baton Rouge and the Revolutionary War, discrimination, and, hard to read this, many other things since the early 20th century, the rise of the oil industry and the threat this has presented to fishing and the physical health of the region and its people. Hurricane Katrina and the destruction it brought to many homes, boats, and lives. Well, it apparently was a song he wrote in their honor, and it's called Laissez le bon temps rouler, let the good times roll. So the earlier song was In the Name of God, castigating a murderer of doctors who perform abortion, apparently. And that those are two from David Rovick's Troubadour. This is a show which I do every week, twice a week actually, and try to interview locals on breaking issues. I'm hoping to have a couple folks in the studio to talk about the smart meter struggle. I ran into Marilyn Garrett on the way to my car, and I chatted briefly with Coral Bruna, who's a regular commentator, has her own show on Free Radio on Tuesday evenings, and she may be showing up in the studio. We also have a jailbird, Linda LeMaster. These are sort of regulars who show up on my show, of course. But they all kind of got together for the for the hearing we had today. The hearing before two judges, not three judges, which I'm going to be talking about in a bit. Before I do, however, a little less ponderous and a more jovial number, one of my old favorites from Uncle Banzai. You may recognize this tune. If you don't, hopefully you'll enjoy it anyway. It's called Penis Envy.
Thank you, guys. You know, I don't know what you're doing over there, but we're literally official. Oh, you're recording.
Remember that?
You mean you got all this for public radio?
Would you like to introduce this song?
We have one more children's song for you. It's my opinion that a child is never too young to learn about Freud.
Absolutely. Right. Okay, so this is a song about what Ashley and I would do if one day we were so lucky as to be endowed with a penis of our own.
One each.
One each, that's right. Because, you know, I'll share the motorhome with you, but, you know.
Really?
I'll go so far.
Well, one of you sits in the upper, one of you sits in the lower bunk, so it would have been a really ugly scene.
It would have been like Slinky. One for public radio. anyway, this is what we would do. We made a list of sort of things we thought would be fantastic to do with it, and that's what this song is.
Right. It's called, appropriately, Penis Envy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
I'd wear it outside in cafes and carlots with pop and with pride. If I had a penis, I'd pamper it proper. I'd stay in the tub and use me as a stuffer. If I had a penis, I'd take it to parties, stretch it and stroke it and shove it at Smarties. I'd take it to pet shows and teach it to stay. I'd stuff it in turkeys on Thanksgiving Day. I'd shower my spire with your youth and gifts. I'd peek around corners, I'd aim at my toilet. I'd poke it at corners, I'd soap it and oil it. If I had a penis, I'd run to my mother, comb up the hair and compare it to brother. I'd lance her, I'd knight her, my hands would indulge. Pants would seem tighter and buckle and bulge. A penis to plunder, a penis to push. Nobody's there. I'd sit like a guy, I'd straddle the chair. I'd play with my fly, albeit with care. I'd dip it in chocolate, I'd stick it in sockets. I'd soldier the movies with hands deep in pockets. I'd stick it in vacuums on vacant verandas. Gaskos and novels and poodles and pandas and puddles and drapers and talkers and bitches. Pulls and bottles and bottles and bitches. Zucchinis and seeds, tomatoes and marshmallows and pumpkins and pumpkins and custards and crackers and melons and marshmallows. Gloves and gorillas, Slurpees and slippers, Chinnips and chinchillas, a penis to plunder, a penis to push. That's one in the hat, it's with one in the bush. A penis to love me, a penis to share.
I'd climb every mountain. I'd force it on females. I'd pee like a fountain. If I had a penis, I'd still be a girl. But I make much more money and conquer the world.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Enjoy your evening.
And that was Penis Envy by Uncle Banzai from, goodness gracious, 30 years ago, more or less, 27 actually, to be exact. Copyright 1984, the inessential Uncle Banzai. Essential, actually. And an old, old favorite of mine. So in case you want to call in because you have breaking news, such as harassment on the streets by local gendarmes that you haven't yet written up on the indiebay.org/Santa Cruz website, or perhaps written down at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is a place at 703 Pacific where you can write down incidents of police misconduct. I think they're even holding a police obsolescence workshop right now, even as I speak, which they do every Thursday, 5:30 to 7:30. You might want to check that out if that's a subject of interest to you, as it is for me. You can also go to the new Bad Cop Santa Cruz website, which provides opportunities for people to write down what experiences they've had. I'm thinking mostly probably of the negative experiences. I mean, there are other sites, and perhaps you could also try writing about the occasional good cop Santa Cruz. That can happen, too. It's happened before. It can happen again. But generally, I tend to notice and pay more attention to, and am much more concerned about, the bad cop situation, and that's where you can write about it on Bad Cop Santa Cruz. So that's something you can do. I'm also going to catch up with a few street interviews now, and hopefully I haven't played these before, but I think we're okay with these. Let's see where we're at. This is from, I believe, a week ago. And let's tune in and see what was happening last Saturday.
Downtown about 8:30 on July 14th, Bastille Day, and the piercing sound of a gang of mariachis not too far from the Cafe Campesino, appropriately enough, with a crowd of folks standing nearby. And the display device is actually legally placed 10 feet from everything, the sidewalk cafe, the kiosk, the crosswalk, and so forth. We're talking six guys with various string instruments, two horns, actually seven, counting the violin. So it's Saturday night around 8:40, with, you know, the strummings of a musician in front of El Palomar here as dusk falls, and a very pleasant evening. How's it going?
Doing good.
Good, and no hassles with police?
What?
No hassles with police. Anything you want to say for free radio? I'm doing interviews on the street.
It's been good for me.
How long you been out today?
About 2 hours.
And are you doing this for the artistic thrill, or are you actually getting some money out of it?
Well, I'm practicing playing in front of people. It makes a difference. You can't stop and sort of go back and practice one thing. It's sort of a great practice for playing things all the way through. And also catching people's eyes and seeing what people like and what they don't like.
And is this one of your first times on the street, or have you been doing this for a while?
Many years, off and on.
Are you usually on indoor venues, or...?
When I play professionally, it's usually indoors. So I've done a lot of outdoors, too.
A lot on Pacific Avenue? Because I haven't seen you much recently that I've noticed.
I just started. I haven't really played on Pacific Avenue in quite a while.
Any hassles with police?
Not really. You know, it's like one point I was, they say something about five squares away from benches and doors and that kind of stuff. But it's been pretty nice this time. Last time I played, there was just so much unpleasantness.
Of what sort?
Just hassling me, telling me, you know, nitpicking about where I was standing. And how long ago was that?
And we interrupt this, unfortunately, rather not unusual report from a street performer because we do have a live phone call. Hi there, caller.
Hi.
And you say you have an event you want to announce?
Yes, I've organized an event for this Saturday in Santa Cruz for the prisoners who are on hunger strike all across California in protest of inhumane conditions.
Uh-huh.
They have five very simple demands that are essentially human rights, and they have stated that the strike is indefinite, and they will be refusing to eat until the demands are met. It's been going on for 3 weeks.
What are these five demands?
The first demand is to end group punishment and administrative abuse. They want individual accountability. They don't want to be punished in large groups or by race. The second is to abolish the debriefing policy and modify active and inactive gang status criteria. The third is to comply with the U.S. Commission on Safety and Abuse in America's Prisons recommendations regarding an end to long-term solitary confinement. The fourth is provide adequate and nutritious food. And the fifth is to expand and provide constructive programming and privileges for indefinite SHU status inmates. And the SHU are the security housing unit.
Run that last one by me again, caller.
The last one?
Yeah, the last one.
Expand and provide constructive programming and privileges for indefinite SHU status inmates. They want to be able to have a calendar on their wall. They want to be able to send one photo back to their family once a year. They want a pull-up bar. They want natural light occasionally. They're kept in very small cells for 22 hours a day for 5, 10, 20, 40 years without ever feeling natural sunlight on their skin.
So how long have you been involved with this prisoners' rights movement, which I assume predates this three-week-long strike, hunger strike?
Yes, it definitely does. I personally am not with any particular organization. I had a brief experience in jail, and since that, during a peaceful protest, I was arrested. And since then, I've become extremely interested in California's prison problem. Yeah, and they have been not eating for 3 weeks and have made it very clear that they'll continue to not eat until these demands are met. And the only way that they can peacefully protest is by refusing their food.
You know, I've seen a small story about this on Democracy Now. It looks like the mainstream media are largely ignoring this issue.
Yes, they definitely are. They'll downplay the numbers. They'll say it's dwindling and it's ending. The CDCR, California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, has made it very clear that they will allow people to die. And so we really need to pressure legislators, local legislators, and Jerry Brown. So hopefully that's what this peaceful march will do on Saturday. We'll have mass call-ins to legislators and government officials.
So what legislator in the area is most liable to, I don't think any of them are liable to pay too much attention to pressure unless somebody wants to actually shut down their restroom or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to say. I would recommend that people just look up their local representatives, but I think that if a lot of pressure is put on Jerry Brown, that's really a very important aspect of it.
And what is this event? Tell me more about this event you're planning for day after tomorrow.
Yeah, it's planned. I've spoken to many, many individuals and some organizations who are going to be there. It's going to be a march that begins at noon at the clock tower downtown, and it's going to be a walk wherever we feel we need to go. Hopefully there's people out, tourists, locals, people who will be able to raise some awareness too, and maybe even end up doing some call-ins and some activity near the county jail in Santa Cruz. I just want to let legislators know that we are aware that this is going on and that we won't tolerate this abuse of human beings, whether they're prisoners or not. No one deserves to be in these sort of conditions, and these are the conditions that we claim we're out fighting wars against, and you really don't need to go to Guantanamo Bay to see these sort of conditions. They're right here in California.
Though some media is carrying information, for example, I'm looking at the East Bay, Indy Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Hunger strike carries on, reaching 6,600 prisoners. And there's actually, yes. Well, the latest update doesn't look too updated. That was 7/12.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess yours is a sort of a later update. Now, is there a website people can go to get more current information?
Yeah, I would say the best website is prisonerhungerstrikesolidarity.wordpress.com.
One more time.
prisonerhungerstrikesolidarity.wordpress.com. That has a lot of very recent updates. It has updates that have been going on all throughout the strike. There was a national conference call a couple days ago with people giving strategies and updates from strikers' family members who have gone and visited them. They've seen their family members faint and go into diabetic shock. A lot of the people that have been on strike all 3 weeks have lost 30 pounds, have had renal failure. They're unable to make urine. They're unable to drink water. But they're still hanging on and saying that there's nothing that can be done to them that hasn't been done before. So they're going to keep doing it.
Guards aren't force-feeding them yet, eh?
No, and the prisoners are able to say they don't want to be force-fed, and I believe that if they are doing that, it's because they don't want to be sent off and be separated from the strike. And, force-feeding itself is even a very brutal process, if you can imagine, happening there.
What is the reason, what is the rationale for the prison authorities not force-feeding the prisoners? They just think people don't give a shit, so they don't have to, they can let them die one by one, or?
Yeah, and they really want this to disappear, and they want people to die, and then for it to be swept under the carpet, and people to have their spirits broken, and that's what they're doing. For instance, early on in the strike, in one of the prisons, a guard was going up and down through the corridors announcing the strike was over and the demands had been met, which was a blatant lie. This caused about 1,000 prisoners to go off strike, thinking that that was the truth and that the strike was over. And then a little bit later down the road, the CDCR finally bent down to some pressure, sat down, negotiated, but all they offered was a very, very vaguely worded, almost insulting offer to evaluate their own policies. But the problem is that the CDCR has proven that they can't even follow their own protocols, and we can't leave it up to them to make the decisions. The prisoners have a mediation team of lawyers that they want to be present in the negotiations.
What about in other countries? Has this tactic been successful there? How do prison conditions of the Pelican Bay isolation, solitary confinement type compare with conditions in other countries?
I can tell you that most people from other countries that I've spoken to about this matter are just amazed, and they know that America is actually cages more of its people and people that aren't our own people than any other country. And the thing is with these demands, that these basic demands, even in other supermax prisons that are supposedly housing the worst of the worst in other states, those prisoners even have these privileges because they're basic human rights. And so that part in itself is kind of unique to California, that there's no reason why these demands can't be met because these conditions exist in other SHU supermaxes.
So how long have you been involved with this struggle?
The strike started on July 1st, and from the day it began and I heard about it, I've been just watching it on the edge of my seat, trying. I kind of organized this single-handedly, but I was lucky enough to find some organizations and some connections and kind of get the word out. So I'm hoping to have a decent turnout.
What kind of work do you do yourself?
Aside from this?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a student at UCSC. I'm an art student, and I'm also going to be a community studies major because of the brief experience I had in jail and getting arrested and organizing. To do both of those. Huh?
Is that a local Santa Cruz arrest or somewhere else?
That was in Sacramento at the state capitol. I was arrested there with 70 other students and teachers protesting the cuts to education.
Are you still facing charges, or were they dropped?
No, we all pleaded not guilty and wanted to go to our court dates and wanted a chance to talk about why we were doing what we were doing. and then they dropped all of our charges. They actually kept charges for one girl.
What were you charged with?
We were charged with failure to disperse a public building after hours, essentially trespassing. We were in the state capitol an hour after it had closed, and the protest was entirely peaceful, but we were doing discussions and teach-ins and stuff like that, and we were given an order of dispersal, and we stayed, and they started picking people off and ended up arresting a whole bunch of us.
Was this, you don't remember the actual code section, do you? It wasn't 647E, was it?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. It was something like 206.
Uh-huh. We have local homeless people charged with a similar crime, though not inside a building, lodging. Where they're,
yes.
You know, I think
yes.
You may have heard of that situation.
Yes,
which,
I have.
You know, already we have two individuals convicted of it, Ed Fry and Gary Johnson, who are out on bail, but they're convicted and already sentenced to 6 months in jail. And they're trying to appeal, but if they lose their appeals, they go back to jail for 6 months. And Linda LeMaster, another activist, faces a trial, I believe it's maybe as soon as next week or the week after, on the same charges. But what about local jails? Have you done any investigation of what's happening in Santa Cruz?
No, I haven't, actually. To be honest, the past few weeks I've been pretty caught up on this matter just because I know how many lives are on the line. But, no, I would like to look more into that just locally. The knowledge I have is kind of a more broad scope of California.
Right. Well, I'd love to hear... because I tend to focus on local stuff, even though I'm,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, it's good to hear that, you know, what's going on at the worst of the worst places in California. But we often sort of, in our passion, whether it's for overseas injustices or national
mm-hmm.
problems or even state problems, we don't, you know, we don't pay attention to what's happening in our own jail. So I'm glad that you are doing a protest this Saturday, is it?
Yes, at noon.
Noon at the town clock. I wish would people bring along what?
I'm asking people to wear orange. I'm bringing a bunch of orange T-shirts and painting some stuff on them, but I would like everyone to wear orange. I think that's a really easy, simple way to communicate why we're going to be doing what
orange
we're doing.
Orange jumpsuits being what prisoners in jail wear. Would you like to have a couple Abu Ghraib-style people masked and strung up, perhaps?
I am down for whatever people want to do to get the message across.
And how can people get more... Go ahead.
Huh? Oh, go ahead.
How can people get more information about this particular protest?
I created a Facebook event. It's called Sidewalk Solidarity March.
Okay.
I don't have the link right in front of me, but I believe if you search that on Facebook that it should come up. I've reached out to a couple different organizations like that Prison Hunger Strike Solidarity blog I mentioned for them to post it on there because I know people are checking that very often.
You also might want to post something on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media.
Yes.
If you're familiar with that website.
Yes, I am.
You know, I just had another activist enter the studio here, rarely... graces us with his presence these days. When he does show, it's delight might be a little strong, but it's certainly not unpleasant to have him here. Steve Plage. Steve, caller, do you want to sign in and say who you are? You don't have to.
Oh, yes, I would love to.
What's your name?
Courtney.
Courtney, meet Steve. Steve, meet Courtney.
Courtney, pleasure.
Hi, Steve. Nice to meet you.
Mm-hmm. Steve is the homeless... Legal Assistance Project in its entirety, the one-man show who also is involved with the Suicide Prevention Needle Exchange and running for city council in his odd hours.
Wow, that's great.
Well, I'm not participating in the North Facer defense in Superior Court.
Indeed. Yeah, he was actually helping us in court today as we tried to appeal our conviction for singing subversive songs on the sidewalk.
Wow.
So this is going to be a march possibly to the prison, maybe a stroll. Got any musical instruments coming along at noon on Saturday?
Yeah, I'm hoping. I'm going to tell people to bring whatever they can to make noise. There have been some noise rallies for this hunger strike that I think have been very effective. I believe probably drums. I know some of my friends will probably be bringing some of that. I'm hoping strangers who I've invited will also do the same.
Well, that sounds good. And again, we've been talking with Courtney of UCSC, who is working on the five demands of the prisoners. Well, actually, you're trying to, I guess, arouse local community sentiment Saturday at noon at the town clock.
Yeah.
And you're hoping that the five demands of the prisoners and the prison strike, which is still happening throughout California and in other states as well, right?
Yes, it is. There have been shows of solidarity in other states and Canada even. It is mostly centralized right now in California, but it's definitely been connected to issues all across the country.
And those demands are to end group punishment and administrative abuse, abolish the debriefing policy and modify gang status penalties, comply with an end to the long-term solitary confinement demand, adequate food programs for inmates, such and also other modifications like a calendar on their wall, a photo back to their families once a year, my goodness, natural light, and things of that sort. They're currently being held in solitary confinement 22 hours per day for years on end. Is that the sad truth?
Yes, that's true, and studies have showed that being in that sort of condition for even 30 days is very, very mentally, just decays people mentally. And these people, some people have been in it for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, some 40 years.
Really? I thought the Pelican Bay wasn't that old.
Well, I might not be talking about Pelican Bay specifically, because Pelican Bay was sort of what the other SHUs were modeled after. But I think what's really important to realize in this is that, or at least what I'm trying to get across with this march, is that this is a human rights issue, and that anyone that is concerned about how we treat our human beings, even if they're just trying, if they are have committed a crime and they are serving time, that the SHUs create this image of the worst of the worst of the worst to try to make these people disappear and make the public not care about how they are treated. But a lot of the people in the SHUs are people who have tried resisting to the system before. A lot of them are political prisoners. A lot of them are labeled as being active in a gang because they have a tattoo or because they wear a certain color T-shirt. There's no fair judicial process for deciding if someone is a member of a gang.
Now, are you in contact with any of the prisoners?
No, I haven't. I've sent letters. I haven't been in contact with any prisoners as much as I would like to. I'm not really able to get that information because I don't know anybody that's in there currently. But I have heard people speak at these meetings that have children in there or that know people in there, and I would love to reach out to those people and have them come to this event to speak if they're willing to speak about that.
Are they being allowed to mail people outside of prison?
I have heard from a lot of people who have been very worried because they haven't been getting mail back as regularly as they are. There is a little bit of mail going back and forth, but I think that it is needless to say that their mail is being regulated even more than usual because of this strike.
Do you want to stay on the line while we invite callers, or do you want to take off?
I can stay on the line for a little bit.
I should ask Steve Plaitcher whether he has any questions or comments for you.
Well, I'm coming in a little late in the event. Is this just protesting or support unreasonable conditions in Supermax facilities or the California prison system in general?
Before you answer that question, for those who want to call in and speak with Courtney, Steve and myself, 469-3119. 469-3119 is the call-in number. 469-3119. Go ahead, Courtney.
No, this isn't something that is unique to security housing units, but it is where the strike originated at Pelican Bay, and I'm just being careful not to alienate any inmates at various prisons, but it is mostly aimed at the security housing units that have these conditions. And even if these demands are met, we have a long way to go with our human rights issues and how we treat our prisoners. But I think that in the supermaxes, if these five demands could be met, that would be a great start.
Yeah, of course. Have you gotten any support, or you have any connections with friends outside and groups like that?
Say that again?
Friends outside, that's a group of folks who foster better communications between inmates and their families and try to support inmates after they're released from prison to be able to blend back into society more easily. They've been around for a long, long time. I just wonder if they have had any interest in supporting your movement.
Oh, I actually have not heard of that organization. I've heard of many like it. Did they have a local branch? Are they around
you
here?
You know, I think they do, because my recollection is one of the nonprofit agencies I work for, they have a lot of their volunteer-driven, of course, as you understand, and they have a lot of interns. And I think I was talking to one intern the other day who was saying that she was going to get involved with the local friends outside. So it might be something you want to go online on the Internet and just see if they have a local chapter and see if they have any interest in supporting this. They would be concerned about prison conditions, because they are
Definitely.
In constant contact with folks who are incarcerated. So it seems like they would be a good source of support.
Yeah, that could be very effective. I will look into that.
Well, Courtney, thank you for calling in. And for those who want to call in, you have 10 seconds, and we're going to let Courtney go.
No, we can't let her. We refuse to let her go.
Well, Steve won't let you go. That's between the two of you. I'm not going to get into that particular one. For those who are interested, Molly Parzik, Dorothy Nunn, and Desiree Lozoyo were three guests to Amy Goodman. The Amy Goodman show of last mm-hmm. July 15th. You may remember that show. Perhaps you did you hear it, Courtney?
I don't believe if I heard that particular one.
It actually was. It's now archived on the Internet. Protests grow in solidarity with California prisoners as hunger strikes in her third week, and it's got a Rush transcript. It's got a video and audio coverage, and it has the. I actually heard the show myself. It talks in detail more about the issue in some more depth than we've covered it here. In case people want to check that out, that's at democracynow.org. Just go back to July 15th or go to the search function for prison, and you can find it there.
Great.
All right. Meanwhile, on Saturday at noon, good luck with the protest. And
thank you.
I'll probably be playing cards somewhere.
Well,
but
I'll see you there, Courtney.
Okay,
I'll
great.
Introduce
I'll
myself.
See you later.
You're
okay.
At least one person, and maybe he'll have an anti-war sticker.
Well,
with him.
It's a prison movement, so we'll see if we can get
right
some
on. Well,
conditions
all right.
changed.
All right, we'll see if you can overthrow the government. That would be very helpful, if that would be possible.
All right, wear orange, Steve.
Thank you, Courtney.
Thanks, Courtney.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. FreakRadio.org is where we are streaming at. Call-in number is, let's get back to the older call-in number, 427-3772. We may be getting a few other calls on other issues. Usually I focus on homeless issues. And indeed today, I was in court today. I think I'm going to play most of those tapes on Sunday because I haven't really queued them up. But I know, Steve, that you were there. And since it's really difficult to catch you in the studio on Sundays, although we do get your brief and often rapidly spoken updates.
So much information, so little time.
For sure. And I know that your usual good disposition, which is sometimes tempered with impatience, one has to say occasionally you become impatient with even so modulated and well-spoken individual as myself. I know today you're getting capping your finger in a repeated frustration as I tried to consider other issues in this appeal case.
No, you were very well spoken on our ticket today.
I used mainly your
both
script, which
yeah.
of course doomed us. Yeah. We were found guilty,
no,
as you
I
know.
Thought my observation was both you and Ed Fry. Ed Fry, of course, represented Robert Facer.
Why don't you describe what case we're talking about, or should I?
Well, absolutely, it's your case, so please give us some background.
Oh, well, of course, everybody knows who's listening to the show. We're talking about the Sing Song Sidewalk Citation case, which really was a complaint by a private citizen, Sean Riley, about a year and a half ago. You know, what was a regular protest we do every couple of weeks outside the bookshop Santa Cruz, which is the lair of Ryan Coonerty, mayor of Santa Cruz, when he's not busy violating the law by sending out illegal flyers. He seems to be engaged in ducking in and out of the bookshop, claiming he's not really involved there either. One wonders where exactly he is. In fact, I wondered, whatever happened to the Harvey West Pool project that he was supposed to be opening up and apparently turned down a pilot project for just yesterday? At least that's the skivvy I hear. Heard anything about that, Steve?
Well, there'll be more. We can talk about that later, really.
It's true. It's not about that.
Right.
You know, but the point is, Coonerty is a, I wouldn't call him a, I suppose I would call him a power broker in Santa Cruz, because he has a majority on the city council. He has three council members, and that's a total of 4 out of 7 who regularly follow him. And he is the son of a powerful supervisor, Neil Coonerty. And he has a reputation, I think largely undeserved, as a liberal in the community. He's gotten awards from the ACLU, the Lion of Justice Award.
I think he got the Hammer of Justice from someone.
I think you're right. It was the Hammer of Justice. I would be lying to call it the Lion of Justice Award.
I think it's the Hammer of Justice, the Bell of Freedom.
Yeah.
And you talk about the love between
Peter, Paul, and Mary will never forgive you for that one. I don't even think they made that one up, though. So, but it's a great tune. I used to sing it when I was in college, and I still do, actually, on the sidewalk. And haven't been arrested for it yet, but we were, in fact, cited and technically non-custodially arrested, which means you were given a ticket, couldn't leave while the cop was writing you the ticket, and so you were, in fact, technically arrested, but not taken into custody, on the say-so of a day sleeper, who apparently is a kind of a coffee roaster worker by night. He works for the coffee roasting company, not the coffee roasting company necessarily, one of the roasting companies in town. His name is Sean Riley, lives right above the bookshop Santa Cruz. And he didn't like our singing, although he insisted it wasn't content-based. He was simply trying to go to sleep during the day. It was a Wednesday afternoon. We were there from about 1:30 to 3, at which point an officer showed up and essentially said that somebody wanted us to quiet down. We said, well, how quiet? You know, we are doing a protest. We are singing songs. We are trying to attract attention. It is the middle of the day, and there is a First Amendment in Santa Cruz. And she couldn't tell us how quiet she wanted it, and she wouldn't say who was complaining. And we asked her, did she find it unreasonably disturbing? Because that's the phraseology of the ordinance. Unreasonably disturbing noise is not allowed. And she wouldn't say whether she found it unreasonably disturbing. But finally, she apparently used her cell phone, called Sean Riley, and said, they won't leave unless you come down and give them a ticket. Which actually wasn't necessarily true, though it might well have been true, because we did feel we had a right to be there. The noise level rose because we were debating with the officer what was going on here. Was she saying that any private citizen could tell people not to sing songs on the sidewalk? We were singing songs about homeless issues, about the fact that the homeless was a large rise in the homeless death rate from 2008 to 2009. This was the early days of 2010. We helped Ryan Coonerty and other politicians, you know, bear some responsibility for this, given the fact that they don't use any meaningful amount of funding for shelter or housing or projects of that sort. And also that civil liberties are routinely violated by police against homeless people, making it difficult for them to shelter themselves. So this was not an unusual protest, but the officer involved just chose to... essentially, I think she didn't like that we were challenging her authority. We were trying to ask her questions. She didn't have any answers to us, so she decided it was simpler just to write us tickets. And she had Sean Riley write us a ticket as a citizen arrest. And he actually... He wrote tickets for people who weren't singing. He wrote tickets for people who weren't even there. And he ignored the people who actually were singing the loudest. And they weren't singing any loudly in any illegal way, but they were probably the prime singers. And one person who was playing an electrical keyboard, not very loudly, rather quietly, in standard fashion on Santa Cruz Pacific Avenue. It had been done there many a time by the Raging Grannies in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. But in this case, we were representing HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a homeless civil rights group, were dragged into court. We were tried. Becky Johnson, one of the four charged, was immediately convicted after an hour trial, essentially on the false testimony of Sean Riley, who claimed that we had been there and she had been there for 4 hours, which was impossible. We had been meeting in HUF at the... I can tell you, I was there for an hour and a half. I got there... 1:30 and set everything up, and nobody was there when I got there. Becky arrived at 2, I believe it was, or 2:15, maybe even later. And we weren't. The amount of singing was relatively limited. It was a bogus complaint that was amplified and made worse by the city attorney's participation in this. The city attorney got involved. Although we went to city council, we requested the charges be dropped. We thought they were false, and the city council ignored that and directed the city attorney to proceed. We were tried in two different cases. As I said, Becky Johnson was found guilty in one case. And then the other, there were three, actually four defendants. One of them was a completely innocent woman named Michelle, who lived in the bookshop Santa Cruz and came down to have a peek at what was going on. And she was suddenly named as a singer. And she was very upset because she'd never been ticketed. She'd never been arrested. She was a school teacher. But the officer gave complete authority to this this guy, Sean Riley, who, it turns out, had been a regular harasser of other street performers on different occasions. He, perhaps because he tried to sleep during the day, he had this job, and he felt he was entitled to shut people up on the sidewalk in front of him. And all full disclosure, he claimed that he had closed the window, he claimed that he had turned on the air conditioning, he claimed he had turned on the television.
He should have turned on one of your shows, he would have slept like a baby.
If he had turned on one of my shows, all this might have been averted. But nonetheless, that's a joke, folks. We all know my show is one of the most exciting shows.
We're not
shows.
Revisiting the facts.
We aren't going to revisit the facts, no. Okay. Because, in fact, what your point is, Steve, of course, is that we went to trial, and the longest trial, and I say in Santa Cruz history, it's certainly the longest one I've ever heard of, in an infraction case.
Infraction trial.
14-hour trial over, what, 7-8 days?
Yeah.
Something like that. And, you know, it went on and on and on. Almost every single witness, with the exception of Sean Riley and, I suppose, arguably, Officer Schoenfeld, though she walked by and had no problem with anything we were doing. She didn't say we were playing with amplified sound without a permit, which we didn't have, and we were doing, although it wasn't really that amplified. It was a very low keyboard. And she didn't say we were engaging in unreasonably disturbing noise, though she heard us. She claimed later, I think it was a quarter block away or a half a block away, which often you can on Pacific Avenue because of the acoustics. Sometimes you can hear people two blocks away.
Sure. I mean, it's convenient. Well, and it should be noted that our friend, who will remain nameless, plays keyboard regularly on the Pacific Garden Mall and is, you know, never has any problem, from what I understand.
Right, although there's been this bizarre crackdown on some amplified. It seems to be really a question of how. Complete officer discretion is what it seems to be to me. That, you know, the officers choose to go easy on you, you're in good shape. You know, so I guess the lesson that they're trying to teach street performers and other activists is do what the policeman says, period.
Are you implying that there is a selective prosecution element?
Well, that wouldn't be prosecution. That would be enforcement. The prosecution is in the hands of John Barrasoni, Caio Arellano, and George Kovacevic and other noteworthies in the city attorney's office who are engaged in spending city money to make sure these renegade activists and musicians don't challenge the authority of their officers and the private security guards paid for by the Downtown Association. And so it really is an attempt to get things running smoothly with a big smile on people's faces as they proceed to do what the officers say. If this sounds uncomfortably familiar, I will not pull out the Nazi card, because that, of course, would be to, as some would say, lose the argument before I begin. But it
That's
certainly
right.
does have a certain odor of the police state to it. And because police states are states where the police make the rules, they don't have to follow the rules. They are the rules. And they may be very nice people. I mean, I'm not saying most police officers in Santa Cruz aren't nice people. Even Steve Plaich is known to schmooze with the police chief, Kevin Vogel.
But we digress as we're talking about
you. We are digressing, and wow, is it fun. I love to digress. That's why I told you to describe this, Steve, so we wouldn't be going into a 20-minute description. But no, you had to let me describe.
I'm sure that your listeners are finding all this background fascinating.
Oh, exciting. For the 15th time, I'm sure. In any case, however, we finally reached an appeals court today, which means that the commissioner who listened to this 14-hour trial decided we were guilty of unreasonably disturbing noise because we had conspired beforehand. She didn't use the word conspire, but she said we had made or made, suffered to make, there's a kind of unusual language in the ordinance, sounds that were unreasonably disturbing because they were too prolonged, too harsh, so prolonged, so harsh, so unusual, or so cranky. I don't know what the last adjective is in there.
So physically annoying to a person of ordinary sensitivity.
And physically annoying or physically disturbing. Or,
yeah.
And they had all these kind of phrases that, I mean, Sean Riley never claimed that he had been bitten by a bumblebee while listening to the music. He never claimed his eardrums had been pierced by the sounds, but he claimed he had been disturbed. And, of course, we actually intended to disturb people, but not in the sense that we were playing so loudly that people couldn't think. We intended to disturb them with the message of what we were playing and singing and petitioning and doing street interviews, which is what I do a lot of, as you may notice, if you're a regular listener to the show. Now, Steve, you have been instrumental in helping help prepare the arguments in this case, fruitless and futile as they may have been, around the issue of what was wrong with finding us myself, Robert Facer, guilty, and also Becky Johnson, of course, but that was another case because she got an earlier trial before a different judge and got an earlier appeal was squashed by a three-judge panel. What's wrong with this whole thing? Why should I mean, don't people downtown have the right to just have some quiet enjoyment of the property?
Well, I'm certain that they do, but
what's the issue here?
Was constitutional due process in that when penal ordinances are drafted, you have to give people due notice of what it is that they're doing that constitutes violation of an ordinance. And it can't be a subjective standard. It has to be some objectifiable acts that they are violating so that they can be constitutionally noticed and have an opportunity as well to comply with the law. And your position was, and Robert Facer's position, as voiced eloquently, I thought, for him by Ed Frey in court, was that certainly these laws have no specificity. The ordinary person cannot possibly understand with any reasonableness, you know, what it is that they are being prohibited from doing. And thus they can inadvertently, really, violate an ordinance that is just certainly doesn't give them proper constitutional due notice in terms of how to proceed. And your argument, equally articulate, I thought, before the appellate court, today the appellate panel, which was Judge Paul Burdick and Judge Paul Maragonda, was that they certainly don't have the specificity that's necessary. And this is what we're talking about. Robert has just handed to me the ordinance itself, and these are the very things that an ordinary person, in my mind, can't reasonably be expected to understand in terms of what they are not allowed to do. And that was the argument. I thought we made the argument well. In fact,
read the ordinance.
I can read the ordinance.
I think it'll be helpful to do that.
This is Municipal Ordinance 9.36.020, Unreasonably Disturbing Noises. And it reads, no person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds that, A, which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or, this is all in the conjunctive, not all in the disjunctive, I'm sorry, as disjunctive, or would you're so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in a use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and B, which are not necessary in connection with any activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. As used in this section, lawfully conducted activities shall include, but not be limited to, any and all activities conducted by the city for public health, safety, or wellness purposes, and that's your ordinance. You know, and if anyone, I defy anyone, to tell me what any of those terms really mean. You know, what is, for instance, physically annoying, as I suggested to Robert in his brief. You know, I've certainly been mentally annoyed, I've been intellectually annoyed, I've been emotionally annoyed, but I can't really recall any time when I've been physically annoyed, when annoyance has actually caused some physical discomfort.
Poison? Certainly poison oak is physically annoying.
Poison oak is physically distressing.
Well,
but that would be equally.
What about a bumblebee buzzing about your ear?
I mean, that's certainly... your audience is certainly intelligent enough, I'm certain, and experienced enough to understand whether or not something, and maybe we have someone calling in who's going to give us their interpretation of the ordinance.
Perhaps so. Let's see what we got here. Hey there, you're on Free Radio with Subversive Steve and Rascally Robert.
Well, I can't hear you very well.
Oh, how about now?
I just wanted to mention the sound meter.
The decibel meter? Yeah, actually,
yes.
There's no...
The decibel meter. The cops should get one, and then...
Well, there is a specific exemption from anybody having to... law enforcement officers having to provide decibel testimony. So they are free from that requirement, at least according to the ordinance as written. That's not part of the ordinance that Steve read, but it's also part of the broader ordinance. They don't have to use a decibel meter. And so they are, essentially freed from that. It's all entirely, or rather, very largely subjective.
Well, if they wanted to be fair, they could rewrite the ordinance so that a decibel meter could be used.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of an amendment that's a well taken point.
An objective standard.
Although the problem would be as to whether a noise is unreasonably disturbing. something in a very quiet room, which is very can be unreasonably disturbing, in a loud a street environment is not. In other words, it often depends on the background noise. So that I think that's one of their excuses for not using a decibel reading. But I think you're trying, and I think properly so, to find a more objective and at least comprehensible standard. You know,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you? I hope you're not doing any singing downtown these days.
No.
What's your thoughts, caller? Is any further reflections on this?
Well, yes. I did want to mention something else. Years ago, I think it was in the 70s, the city of Berkeley decided that for their police department, all the officers would have to have at least a 2-year college degree.
Uh-huh.
And they thought that would improve the quality of the police force.
Uh-huh.
In a university city, and so I guess they went ahead with that, and they've had that ever since.
Well, you know, I think Ryan Coonerty is probably a living testimony to the fact that doesn't always work. And also the Berkeley Police Department is living testimony. I mean, if you talk to activists up in Berkeley, you can find some pretty violent behavior, even though Berkeley has what is arguably the most intensive oversight of the police department in the state, it is still badly crippled, underfunded, and has not stopped regular police abuse up there. I mean, it's really it's a nationwide, probably a worldwide problem when this kind of power and authority and lethal force is placed in the hands of people with...
I didn't really want to change the subject, so anyway, I just wanted to mention that. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the offer on the decibel meter.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
You're a good idea.
Call in is 427-3772 if you wish to sing any thoughts to us over the air, perhaps.
And I think there was some discussion about decibel meters. I'm not certain there was a discussion. Anything was excluded in your 14 hours of testimony and discussion in the courtroom.
I didn't bring it up much.
Over those several days. But, you know, I think there were a lot of things, you know, bandied back and forth about what is subjective, what is not subjective, what is objective. Particularly, I think there was a lot of discussion about whether Sean Riley was a person of ordinary sensitiveness and that kind of thing. But I really think those are minor points. I think the points that you made, and I think were well made in court, and I just provided you with an outline. I thought that your oral argument was an improvement on the outline that I had originally drafted, because I think it was more directed toward what is reasonable. You know, what are people expected to know and understand in order to comply with the law? I think everybody, the mainstream anyway, you know, wants to comply with the law. People don't actually leave their houses every morning and intend to break the law and say, well, let's see, if I'm not, restricted from doing this, I'm just going to do this thing, and regardless of whether it's going to break a law, I'm going to perform this act. People are interested in obeying the law, but people are really should have an opportunity to know what it is that they're expected to refrain from doing. And that's simply all you were asking today. And you were asking that, you know, on behalf of the ordinary citizen, on behalf of a tourist, on behalf of a street musician, on behalf of a judge, in fact. You included them. You know, and I think that's true of everyone. You know, all we're asking is simply to explain in objective and clear terms what it is that you would like us to refrain from doing so that we can all live within the law and comply with it. And I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
No, I agree with you, Stephen. I appreciate the outline, by the way, which you put many hours into. You put many hours into this, and you are currently putting many hours into helping random homeless people with... often intractable problems, partially because of the intractable law. I mean, I have to say, my normal approach is not to say, gee, you know, clarify for us that we don't have our civil rights and we'll agree to give them all away if you make it really clear what civil rights we don't have. I don't go for that approach.
No, of course.
That's sort of a legalistic approach. Mm-hmm. But if you're arguing before the Court of Appeals and you can't argue this guy Sean Riley is either a liar or deaf or hypersensitive or deaf in one ear or prejudiced or just mistaken on this issue, because they won't allow you to, quote, retry the case in the appeals court, which is the problem with an appeal, or the reality of an appeal, if you will, then you have to argue that there were legal mistakes made, or that the law itself cannot stand close scrutiny because it violates a higher law, to wit, the Constitution, or an even higher law than that, which I think is, you know, I mean, the Constitution justified slavery for decades. That made it for some people, you know, some people like to go back and talk about our founding fathers and all the wonderful things they did.
There are some people believe that there are higher laws, there are common laws, there are natural laws, you know,
right,
people,
right.
And that's
certainly human decency,
within
I mean,
those doctrines. But I do think it's interest. It would be of interest to your listeners that the Court of Appeal, this appellate panel of the Superior Court, did take great pains to express to all the litigants how well they thought the issues had been briefed on their papers, how impressed they were with the articulation of what they thought were very important issues, and said at the outset that even though their tentative decision was to deny this appeal, that they were entertaining any request by either Robert or Robert Facer to have this case certified to the 6th Appellate District Court. And I thought that not really snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, I'm saying that it was unusual for a court to make that kind of a statement in my experience.
Hmm. Well, I know I've only seen a couple of appeals cases, including the Becky Johnson appeal, I think a Robert Facer appeal on a sleeping ban case, but... You know, I agree with you in that sense, but in another sense, it looked to me clearly like they were passing the buck. They'd made the decision before they walked into the room. I think they were nervous about some of these constitutional issues, because, frankly, it's hard. These judges, however much they may want to be respectful of the police department and respectful of the judges beneath them, also have to some extent, pay some... at least passing regard mm-hmm. for common sense and the law and the ordinary meaning of words.
Of
and for them to look at this language and suggest that anybody can make anything out of it and understand what, in fact, is required of them right. downtown is completely ridiculous. I mean, I have to say that. Now, you know, if you want to, I was trying to be fair about this. I always try to take the devil's advocate position, even when it's my ass in the fire, because as an intellectual exercise... And also as an exercise in trying to find out what's true and what's false, it can be helpful. I tried to look at the city attorney's arguments. The city attorney spent, I don't know, thousands of city dollars on this case with all his time he spent at it.
Well, his position was equally well briefed, no question.
Right, and his point was somehow, I guess, that the main argument we made, we don't need to go into the argument whether the state law preempts it or whether... The evidence was insufficient, though I think it was, but I guess there's a really high standard there. You have to show that there was zero evidence, or that, as you pointed out, the evidence was inadmissible in some way.
Yeah, and that the lower court had mistakenly, in error, admitted evidence that was not admissible in court.
Right, so any... So
in the absence of that evidence, then it would be insufficient to... So
these are two arguments that were made
exactly.
that were dismissed by the judge.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're talking legal arguments. We're not talking about whether there's any fairness here, whether who lied about what, whether there really was... unreasonably disturbing noise happening. We're talking about the conduct of the trial at the court level. Did the judge make any mistakes? You know, and also, was the law itself so unconstitutional that the judge should have been overruled anyway? And that was the issue, because, as we've been saying, due process requires that you be able to understand what the law is in order to obey it.
Exactly.
It may be that ignorance of the law is no excuse, but incomprehensible law is an excuse. It is incomprehensible. You can't follow it because you can't understand it. If it's written in Greek, then you can't be expected to do the, you know, to... I am left breathless and sputtering.
Yes, indeed you are. But, you know, that is what the matter at hand was today. It's a court of law. And they're determining what, and we're arguing basically, what is this law? Is this law constitutional? Does it provide due process as required by our Constitution? And this, so it was more of an academic exercise, and I know that you enjoy those as much as the next person, but it really wasn't a practical exercise in reviewing the facts, determining whether or not Sean Riley actually experienced some discomfort, whether it was your intention to do so, whether or not the sounds that you were making were suffering or causing to suffer in reasonable disturbing noise to a person of ordinary sense. That wasn't being was argued. We were arguing the law. And it was, and I think it was an interesting academic exercise from that point of view. Unfortunately, it does have real-world consequences.
That's the problem. See, that's why I don't like... I mean, much as I might enjoy from my white you know, from my bastion in the hills to look down and say, oh, yeah, it's very interesting.
Well, you're taking your ease in your sylvan glen?
Well, I'm sipping my mint julep and observing, you know, the natives on the porch provide me with the services in the manner to which I'm accustomed. But rather, you know, it's street performers are in a position, although I've got to admit, when I talked to street performers this afternoon after the case, I didn't hear any immediate complaints of local and recent police harassment around street performing. And that might be because of any number of things, but it's continued to be my experience over the last year generally. For example, we had the case of String Stroker Sue, if you may remember, who was arrested for amplified sound. We had the question of how do you get an amplified sound permit, and you know, do you need one wherever? Are you limited to six places on the mall? Well, we never got clear answers out of that because the Street Performers Guild, which magically appears at certain moments and it just as magically disappears soon after, wasn't able to answer that question. Tom Noddy is a key voice there, but unfortunately he's out of town.
And so she wasn't able to get the kind of support she needed, and she ultimately pled guilty and just accepted her community service fine and whatever.
Yeah,
was
I believe
it was imposed.
So. And even if she hadn't, you know, gotten community support, although sometimes community support can have a real impact. So, for example, in Palo Alto this last week, there was a law proposed that would have destroyed the right of a homeless person to sleep in their vehicle at night, a right we do not have in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. But in Palo Alto, they are allowed to sleep in their vehicles at night. And that, indeed, has been the basis for lawsuits against the police who have tasered people, coaxed them out of their vans, and when they tried to get back in, tasered them. Happened in the case of Tony Ciampi, whom I interviewed on the radio here about a month ago. And there was a couple of the neighborhood associations wanted to stop these homeless people from sleeping in vehicles nearby because that made them nervous. It made them uncomfortable. Possibly their children were going to be molested, their wives raped, their husbands assaulted by these homeless vagabonds. Although there were no figures that were shown that would indicate that homeless people are any more or less likely than housed people to do this. But because UCSC students and religious figures mobilized against this ordinance strongly, you can go online and find a petition against the ordinance.
UC Berkeley students, you mean?
Stanford students.
Oh, Stanford students.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean Stanford students. All right. And I actually had one who was going to call in. She may call in on Sunday to the show to talk with us. I think her name is Maria. They were able to get this whole issue postponed until September. And at least there's a delay as to whether it's actually going to be passed. And there's a lot of debate on the Internet around the issue. I was going to read some of those, the back and forth around it. I sent some out on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list, which I encourage people, if they're interested in these issues, to sign up for. You can do it easily by calling the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF.
So this issue is before the Palo Alto City Council?
It is coming up before the Palo Alto City Council in September. It was going to be voted on this coming Monday, but that was essentially because of all the public furor postponed. Now, I know you, Steve, have been working and trying to get... apparently you can't get religious people behind ending the sleeping ban. That's too big of a step for our great Christian leaders here in Santa Cruz, including the very Reverend Joel Miller. Thank you very much. However, there was an ordinance amendment to the sleeping ban passed in 1995, which stated three vehicles per church parking lot and or two vehicles, this was actually a 99 ordinance change, per business parking lot would be allowed with the permission of either the business owner or the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that some of the churches are getting together to try to coax their lily-white congregations into allowing this to happen in their churches because their parking lots at night are vacant anyway. No one's using their damn restrooms. Mm-hmm. And aren't they Christian churches?
Yeah, they are, and I'm not necessarily affiliated with any particular religion. I am a member of this interfaith association because of my work as a homeless advocate and because of my work with the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project most recently. And we're trying to get them to engage on these very social issues, and one way to get them to engage is to consider this kind of RV parking and do that, do it in some way that we can provide some safe spaces for folks who are now camping in their motorhomes illegally in the city of Santa Cruz. So I do think that they are moving toward more social engagement. I think Joel Miller is one of the leaders of this. He may be not moving quite as quickly as some would like him to, but certainly I think that his passion for homeless folks and trying to create more shelter space is commendable, and I do think that he is making a real effort to have this particular association of interfaith churches actually be more action oriented. You know, to get something done rather than just be talking, bemoaning the fact, bemoaning the condition of the homeless folks, rather than, you know, but actually
but
going on.
But of course, his church, which has the largest parking lot of any church in the entire town, hasn't opened up one single space at night. I mean, it's not that I want to put, you know, I like Joel. I mean, I really do. He allows me to speak at his meetings.
Well, and he always uses that as a disclaimer. So, well, I like Kevin Vogel, but I would disagree with his policies. Or I like Joel Miller, but
yeah.
I disagree with his policies.
No, these are
so you don't have to say that, but say what you mean. Then
I am
about
saying
what
I mean.
Okay, then do that.
But it's a complex
you know,
message.
You don't need to couch it in, well, I like the guy, but.
Well,
you
know. I do like the guy, and that's the problem I have. And because I want to give credit, like as you're doing, but the way you're talking, you essentially dismiss the issue I put up by saying, well, I may not be moving as fast as some people would want. No, as
and
individuals in other cities are doing, they are supporting ending the sleeping ban, or at least maintaining the right of homeless people to sleep in their vehicles, and they're doing so quite stringently and quite effectively, quite strongly. You know, Joel Miller is confronted with a right-wing council member, former mayor Cynthia Matthews, who's trying to drive him out of town, for God's sake.
And now unsuccessfully, because that matter has been settled.
Right, and because he had the temerity to continue at a lower, much far lower profile than would previously been the case, the homeless meal on Monday at the Calvary Episcopal Red Church across from the Nickelodeon. But, you know, Matthews has her... Some suggest her motivation is her historic house across the street. Others suggest she simply feels that the business community might be improved by not having a homeless gathering of the sort that Miller has every week. And as far as I'm concerned, it's... I've got to beware demonizing Cynthia Matthews, but I also feel it is really a pernicious kind of attitude. Well, I can otherwise appreciate somebody individual, and here I am going with the double message thing. But I mean, it is a double. You know, that's the trouble. We are confronted with human beings who do sometimes inexplicable bad policies.
I agree that you have to talk in concrete terms about what people are actually doing to address a condition or a situation. I agree with that completely.
Right.
From my point of view, there are things that are being done, or at least that our plans are being made to get things done. Let's see if those plans come to fruition. If they're not, I'll be just as disappointed as you are. But I'm willing to give them a chance to happen. Let's see 2 months from now if we have people parking in the Red Church parking lot overnight. And if that's the case, then certainly your opinion of his...
Why is it contingent upon meetings and for the next 2 months for it to happen? It could have happened any time in the last 10 years.
Because, yeah, well...
Or
and
5 years,
and
or 3 years.
Hasn't. They had a huge...
But Joel Miller was in control of the space. He could have done it.
And as you recall, last November, they had a big meeting of all the churches, and all city council members attended, and I attended, and you were absent. But nevertheless, they thought, well, we're going to do all these things, we're going to get all these things done, and not one single thing was done. It wasn't until 5 months later that we reconstituted this group and started actually moving toward, you know, workable plans to get these things done, that there actually became some kind of a concrete reality that they might actually happen. Now, let's see if they do actually happen. And that can happen today, and that can happen tomorrow, but they might happen next week or next month.
I don't think that my criticizing the behavior, past behavior of the Calvary Episcopal, Joe Miller, and all the other churches in the area would in any way prevent positive things from happening.
And
in
I'm
fact,
not, and
might
I'm
even
not,
encourage
yeah,
them
I'm
to
not
happen.
Saying that you should refrain from doing so.
Right, and I'm not. And that's why, but you are. You see, you're saying, well, let's wait. Let's find out. Let's see what happens. No, I don't think
I'm
we have to.
I'm not suggesting that you do that.
Oh, well, what do you suggest?
I'm suggesting that people generally do that.
Well,
you can do whatever you want.
Right, well,
what I'm concerned.
Yes, but what I'm suggesting is that people should be more militant concerned and not be waiting, as you're suggesting.
And
because
then,
I think waiting is a mistake here, because I think that, you know, we've waited long enough.
And you've discussed this with Joel Miller at length, oftentimes.
Joel and I have had conversations not specifically about the sleeping ban, although about certain other issues
then
involving
perhaps you should address your concerns
the homeless.
To him.
and not to me.
I will address my concerns to everyone who upholds this position, because I think it is
and
you're a mistaken
position. And
you're
singling out Joel for criticism because he had not moved as quickly as you would like him to.
No,
so
you're misstating,
you're misstating my position.
I didn't say he hasn't moved as quickly as possible. He has not moved at all.
Then address those concerns
in
to him.
Terms of that you're shifting the issue. He has not moved at all.
Well, of course I am. I'm a politician.
I know. We don't want to
That's
do that,
That's what
though.
I do.
This isn't a politician show. This is a truth-seeking show. We're
a politician for a
together.
Guest. Yeah.
Yes, I know. Well, Steve...
No, I'm just saying, simply, you know, I think...
We have a different position on this, Steve. Let's acknowledge that.
It would benefit the overall effort for you to speak to Joel, because I think he does respect your position as a homeless advocate.
I will speak with Joel, but I'm not speaking to him right now. I'm talking to you and to the community and to all those who would say, well, give it a little time. Well, go talk to Joel about it. No, I'm talking to anybody who upholds the position that somehow Calvary Episcopal has been okay in what it's been doing for the last two decades.
Now, well,
I never said that. Good. Well, you're saying that it hasn't been okay?
I didn't say one way or another what it is.
That's the problem with you, politicians.
You know, I'm not making any judgments about the history of Calvary Episcopal, which you apparently are so versed in.
Why not?
And I'm not.
Well, so in other words, isn't it our job, at least insofar as we want to see the future change, to make some judgments about the past?
I can tell you what I've seen in the last 6 months, not the last 6 years. You're the historian, not me.
Well, you don't want to hear about history. That's one of your problems, Steve. You regard it as irrelevant, when in fact, those who do not remember the past are may be condemned to repeat it.
Well, in my case, I am making the future, not remembering the
past.
You
are thinking you're making... I've heard that claim from you for the last year and a half, and I'm still waiting to dive into the Harvey West pool.
There you go.
What has been the result of that, by the way, Mr. Pledge? Your attempt
we are
to
moving
the,
forward on that front. Progress reports forthcoming.
I understand you've been disappointed in your discussions with the mayor on this issue so far. And
looks like there'll be no swimming this summer.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll just have to move forward as best we can.
With all deliberate speed.
But that's...
You Negroes are just going to have to wait another year. But remember, I mean, you got to give them time, you know.
Yeah.
There's some good white liberals there, boy.
There you go.
Anyway, Steve, I know that you work very... And this is all very a disclaimer again, but it's also true. You work very hard on these issues, and you speak very well on these issues, sometimes a little too well, I would say. And you also, however, to your credit, are concerned about civil rights for homeless people. Now, you've said to me, I've asked you before, what kind of issues are homeless people coming to you with? And I don't mean who's doing what issue, but are you getting mostly sleeping van stuff? Are you getting mostly they took my property? Are you getting mostly I'm discriminated against the homeless service center? The policeman beat me up? What kind of, or are you getting any category of cases you can categorize?
Well, I'm beginning to get more cases having to do with ordinances being enforced against homeless folks.
Such as a typical ordinance would be?
The woman that we spoke to today at Joe's that you referred to me...
Mm-hmm. Who actually gave her name. She didn't mind talking publicly about the issue.
And she just briefly was mentioning that she received a ticket for something.
Sitting on the levee, I believe it was.
You know, so those kinds of things, I've had two or three or four people talk about that. Now that we have this new dog ordinances as, you know, and prospective
dogs for panhandlers.
Yeah, no dogs for panhandlers. And that should be the topic of an entire show.
That's all I can say.
That they're going to have a second reading of that 7 o'clock. No, it's going to be on the afternoon session, I believe.
Oh, they're going to
the council.
They're going to throw it. At least they won't throw it into the 5 o'clock.
That's right. The 5 o'clock oral communication session.
Oral communication. Thank you very much. Next subject.
But that is, I think, merits a lot of discussion and and some action, some activism, some mobilization, because it does directly work to the detriment of homeless folks who are panhandling because you can't panhandle the dog.
If anybody has any thoughts on this, whether you're a dog owner, a dog watcher, whether you're an individual who's been ticketed or not ticketed for sitting on the levee, a member of the Drum Circle, I guess the Drum Circle is in its own thin, isolated, at the edge of town way, still going on, back of Joe Schultz's on the levee path. Or if you've been ticketed for sleeping in Santa Cruz, because we understand sleeping citations may be somewhat down, and even if it's not down, some of them are being dismissed.
Yeah.
By the city attorney's office, per the Peace Camp 2010 initiated and prompted legal changes of last year, while other people, of course, are still being tried in court for these issues.
That's the pledge plan?
I don't think it was the Plaich plan. I think it was the Barisoni plan, actually. Maybe you and Barisoni have been secretly putting your heads together. That's the city attorney, John Barisoni. In the studio with me is activist Steve Plaich. He can be reached on his cell phone at 334-8692 if you'd like to contact him for legal issues. He's got more courage than I do, putting out a 24-hour-a-day number.
Absolutely.
Of course, he can turn off his phone, which is...
I never do that. It's a true curbside service.
Wow, this is a guy who's really a glutton for punishment. Although he has got an answer for why we should wait another while, give Reverend Joel another few months, and then let's go back, and then maybe we can...
Oh, you're going to have an opportunity come Monday to address these concerns to Joel personally.
I have an opportunity right now, and I'm taking it, man. I'm saying nothing I wouldn't say to Joel directly.
And I'm not saying that you are saying anything.
Well, I like Joel. He's a sweet guy. He's attempting to have me arrested, he's a very... Well, he didn't seem so sweet at that point, but I didn't really know the inner Joel at that point. I've been hearing about exclusions out about the Homeless Service Center. When I last talked to you about it, you said, I'm out here. I haven't seen any exclusions. What are you talking about? So have you gotten any complaints about that, information about that?
No, when I talked to you on the phone, I was up at the Homeless Services Center. We're talking about some legal things and this and that. I have a couple of participants in the assistance project from PageSmith. But I talked to the Nancy Lou, as you know, up there.
Woman.
Because there was some question about whether or not they were going to continue to serve breakfast up there. And she says, yes, they serve breakfast every day. And there was some concern that they were going to be charging for the washers and dryers and that kind of thing.
That'll happen in August.
And they are, 75 cents.
And
doing
some
that.
Concern that the storage lockers have all disappeared.
And there was concern on your part that the people were being excluded from what they call the campus during the day, and unless you're in some kind of a registered or a recognized program up there. And from what I understand, they are still doing that.
They're still excluding people.
They're still excluding people.
Right.
Maybe the reason I saw a number of people up there is because they're increasing the number of people in the programs. That I don't know.
I mean, I don't mind if they want to fit people into their programs to get more money, although it's kind of a cheesy approach.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it were me, I wouldn't be excluding people from, you know, the one place where they can find, you know, safety and relative shelter during the day, just because of the fact that they, you know, want to make it look nicer, it's more presentable, or it's, the neighbors like it better, or, you know, it's a homeless shelter. You know, people up there, you know, have to have a place to be and to be able to get services and be able to you know, access the hygiene bays, be able to store their, you know, their belongings.
Can't store,
things
there
like
are no
that.
Storage lockers.
So if it were me, and bearing in mind that it is not, I would have people there all the time. I really haven't surveyed enough people to know exactly what people's experiences have been in terms of being excluded from campus. I will be talking to people more about that because
and you
it is
regularly
something.
Do see people on Monday at from 5 to 7 at the
Calvary
Episcopal Red Church.
And that's, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before. You know, if you're going to offer homeless folks services, you know, you go where the homeless folks are. You know, you really just have to. And that, you know, for what it's worth, and it's a one night a week meal, and we're all wishing that it could be more. At least for that one night, there are maybe 50 to 100 homeless folks there. So you can go talk to them and ask them, you know, what's your experience at Homeless Services Center? You're having any problem with tickets downtown? Are the police really giving you a bad time? You know, where are you spending your time? Are you being excluded from the levee? Are you being excluded from various areas of the city? Those are the kinds of things I want to find out about. And that's where you find out about those kinds of things. And our good friend Casey Livingood, you know, who is Food Not Bombs here in Santa Cruz, he has been down there regularly, so he's taking an interest in talking to people. That's what you need. And, you know, I don't want to find out, you know, what the homeless people are thinking, because, you know, that's really what it's about. You know, it's what their concerns are and how you can improve, how you can work to improve their conditions. And we're doing what we can. It's never enough, you know, but you work on it every day. And maybe you get some traction on some of these things. Maybe you'll find some improvement. That's why I do it. Because I want the conditions to improve. Again,
you know, this is something you've kind of picked up after about a year and a half ago. You became more interested in this issue. You'd previously been working on suicide prevention and in needle exchange. What got your interest in the homeless civil rights issue?
You know, I don't know. It was just time to be involved because I've always felt that homeless folks are residents of this city and they deserve as much respect and quality of life and integrity as anybody else. And maybe I noticed more and more often that they weren't being accorded that, that it wasn't being provided to them. You know, maybe it was just a time for me to take that step into more activism rather than just being a passive observer of the social condition, which sometimes people can be.
This is sort of cut across, returning a little to the Steve Plate story, for which I apologize, but this cuts across your ambition to be the ninth, I should say the eighth council member.
Often hailed as.
And, you know, and you've repeatedly said you're running for city council in 2012, and you have been worked on a number of projects ranging from the meals at the Vets Hall and at the, would have been a meal at the Vets Hall, mm-hmm. moved to the Civic Auditorium, mm-hmm. and then another move to the Homeless Service Center, and this Harvey West Pool project you put a lot of time and energy into, hoping to get, falling short in your fundraising, but mm-hmm. also, you know, having a real prospect of a project, a pilot project, mm-hmm. were Ryan Coonerty willing enough to give it a try? You felt that would be successful, but
I did.
He provided some what sounded like, and yeah. I'm prejudiced against Ryan in many respects, so I may not understand all his reasons, but it sounded like pretty thin response. I mean, thin excuses that sounded like political cover rather than a real interest in the Harvey West issue, unless, I don't know, it was backed by lots of money, lots of guns, and lots of votes.
Yeah, well, I was disappointed in his response and the response of Parks and Rec. I think that in the coming days, I talked to Jim Brown at Sentinel, and they'll do an article about that, and I think they'll interview all the parties, and I think you'll be able to read and decide for yourself whether or not his reasons were justifiable and whether or not they served the city well. You know, that's about all I want to comment on that right now, and we'll let that play out. I believe that it was a mistake. It was a poor decision not to open the pool for a month or so, let people enjoy it, let everybody see that it could be revived, that it could return to the community. And particularly, one thing I expressed to them, that we had sold a number of memberships to the parents and kids of the Rebel A Family Shelter. And now I'm very disappointed that they won't be able to have the opportunity to walk over to Harvey West and to swim and enjoy a publicly owned facility, which we were more than happy to raise the amount of money we did raise and to run it privately, uncompensated, because we made a commitment to the city that we wanted to do something good to improve the quality of life, you know, not just for the people in the city, but the people in the business park, the people at the Rebel A Family Shelter. And it just, we didn't get the kind of support at the end that I would have hoped for.
Well, look on the positive side, Steve. After all, if those homeless families want to do something, they can go play golf up on the golf course, which I think, what, they just forgave a couple million dollars in debt to, right?
The figure was $2.3 million.
Yeah, so there is money being given to the right sort of sports activity. Perhaps you're simply pushing the wrong thing. You should give people out there with those golf clubs, show them how to improve their swing, you know?
Interestingly enough, my sport when I was growing up was golf, and my parents, when I was about 17 or 18, wanted me to play golf professionally. They said, if you don't want to pursue a college degree, because at that time I was playing at near scratch handicap, which is like, you know, as good as you can get in terms of par, if you know anything about golf. So they said, you know, if you want to go ahead and try to get your game to the point where you can be a professional golfer, get on the professional tour, we'll support you, we'll go ahead and do that. But I just sort of lost interest as I became more involved in kind of socio-political things, and never really pursued that, although all the folks, three or four of the guys that I grew up with playing golf became club pros. So
you could have been a contender. You know?
I could have been a contender. I could be the club pro at DeLaVega.
You could be.
And instead of sitting here talking to Robert Norris, I could be on the veranda of the DeLaVega golf course sipping mint juleps with John Berzon.
I don't know if they provide mint juleps, actually.
Or John Gallagher.
Perhaps.
Or any one of the others who might then grasp my hand and
prep
friendship.
Paul Maragondon
I think Paul, who I don't know, and I don't mean to
I don't
be so informal,
want to know Paul,
is a runner. I've seen him run, and he has a regular route, I think.
He seems to be screwing up his face quite furiously during the decisions. Paul Maragondon was one of the two judges who decided my and Robert Facer's case today in court, and
Because it was obviously a very difficult decision for
very,
him
very much so,
to
yes.
make.
I wouldn't even say it took all of 5 seconds to make a decision. I would say that decision was so deeply decided before we walked in that you could see the deep furrows in the carpet.
And then there was the succeeding 5 seconds is where they insisted that we take it to the 6th Appellate District.
Yeah, get it out of our court, please. Oh, yes, take those issues somewhere else. And
are great issues, but...
But not at this time. In the meantime, we've got other things to do. So you are tuned to Free Radio, listening to the life and loves of Steve Plaich and his secret golfing career.
About that, huh?
The secret background of Plaich and his sports.
The things you learn listening to Free Radio. I was going to ask you because I'd seen Marilyn downtown.
Marilyn Garrett.
Give her your number.
Marilyn Garrett,
of
course, has been working on smart meters. I actually have some great audio here by Josh Harden.
Joshua Hart.
Yeah. Thank you. That he and another activist, Norma, a second woman, covered really provocatively and I think quite temperately, though with some passion too, the issue of the problems with smart meters, which I had previously thought were just in three categories. One was their accuracy. Another was the privacy issue. And the third is the issue of health and how they impact
the electromagnetic
how the radiation
emissions,
spikes
yeah.
impact mm-hmm. you in terms of how they've impacted animals in test circumstances, which I haven't researched. So, you know, I've learned to my chagrin that smart meters have been installed where I live, and my landlord is a big fan of smart meters, which may make him a dumb landlord. Sorry about that, John. But, you know, certainly I think we probably will come to disagree on
so
this
we'll
issue.
So we'll be able to have access to all manner of information.
I learned also the claims that these meters have been responsible for fires.
Really?
According to, that's one of the claims of,
I had not
of Josh.
Heard that.
Yeah, and then there's a couple of other considerations. In fact, I think what I'm going to do, I don't want to do it now because I do want to play some of the street dialogues that I promised people I would play or I suggested I would. And with you in the studio, you probably may quickly exit once you're no longer stage center, which we know is one of your constant tendencies.
Well, there's no promotion like self-promotion.
Well, I know. If it isn't about Steve Plaich, what is it about? You know, as you said, you know. But we have to actually give other people who get so little of a limelight a little of the limelight just to see what's cooking. Also, I mean, I'd love to have your thoughts on anything that's said if you choose to stay. And if you don't... Mm-hmm. People, of course, know where they can find you. If it's not up on the golf course, practicing, trying to reclaim your lost youth.
The next rotary meeting.
Or staring disconsolately at an empty Harvey West pool.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, you'll perhaps be down at the Homeless Service Center watching homeless people. By the way, when I said excluded, I didn't mean excluded during the day. I mean excluded completely from the mailroom,
from the entire area. Some of the back chat that we have been getting from some folks about different procedures.
That's what I'm worried about.
Being instituted in the mailroom and difficulties that people were having accessing their mail. Those are the things that I would like to find out more about.
And that indeed, I mean, I'm interested in that issue, but again, I'm not talking about exclusion from the mailroom. I'm not talking about exclusion.
No.
I'm talking about you can't come on the campus at all because we've decided you're a behavior problem. And the appeal process apparently is either flawed or non-existent or obscure because... Well, I don't know. There are allegations that that is the case, and that I would like to see.
Is there some kind of an appeal process?
Well, according to Mark, who came to our homeless huff meeting, there is a process. He's claimed he's being harassed by one of the staff. He has it on tape recording, the conversation he had with this person.
Ah, okay.
And he feels there is a problem of, and I've heard this from other people, a kind of control-happy folks there. It often has happened in situations in the past when, and this is, you know, this may sound uncomfortable for some, but when homeless people take these positions, and often the Adar's homeless volunteers are taking these positions, you have a situation where the amount of power involved can be abused, not just because people are homeless, but it often happens that way. It becomes I don't know what it is, but... The real issue is there an abuse of power happening? Is there accountability? It's like in any structure. You want to see if it's happening in the police department. Is it happening at city council with the mayor?
Sure.
Coonerty, is it happening at the golf course?
Almost,
I mean, after all, you know, we want to have our golf course.
I mean, almost every agency has that kind of dynamic going on, and the better and more
it never
well
happens running. At Huff. I have a complete free and democratic
with
process.
With the sole exception.
of Homeless United, which has its meetings every Wednesday. For those who are interested, we meet at 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And for those who can't meet with me, Steve Plaich is perennially on the streets. And though not a really close Huth sympathizer, that would ruin his chances in 2012, he is nonetheless knowledgeable around these issues. And as you can hear, he has become increasingly interested in homeless issues over the last year and a half. And he's drawn like the bee to the nectar of the flower, to the honey by this these human rights issues. Mm-hmm. I think I am, and I think he is too. He takes you I think, Steve, you take a more legalistic approach. You want to see, some action through the courts if possible, or through a community dialogue where the policymakers get together and make some real changes instead of having all these people barking, the homeless activists barking, and the city leaders and transgender. You want to see some kind of
solution.
Well,
homeless activists barking has its place
ridiculous,
too. We're just talking about kind of developing the kind of political will that it takes to actually get a city council to repeal, an unconstitutional and
mass movement from below is what you need. And unfortunately, to get that. Is something I don't know how to get. I mean, I've seen it. I guess it's happened. It happens in Latin American countries all the time. In Bolivia, people come out in the tens of thousands of people just to throw the foreign water profiteers out of the country. Of course, they also throw out the government every year and a half too, with mass uprisings. And of course, it happens even in police states like in Egypt or in Tunisia. It's happening in Syria. But we can't seem to get any traction here in the U.S., and I guess all I can say is, as conditions get worse and pressures get harsher, there's no truism here that covers it. Will people get even more depressed and feel even more defeated, and even have to work three jobs to stay on float, or will they get so pissed they say, fuck this shit, we've got to get out there and do what we need to do, and not tomorrow, but today. And, of course, then you have to start trusting the people around you, which can be difficult.
Well, you know better than I, because I think you're more well-versed in the ideology than I, that there are people who do advocate a revolution in this country. They say that's
the
only way,
sure.
That it's really going to affect real change.
And that, interesting enough, I'm hearing more voices that had previously been on the pacifist left, or on the left, sort of like saying, people who would be, I don't even know about the history of these individual people, but I'm hearing voices that talk about the need for active resistance.
Mm-hmm.
We can't simply write letters. We can't simply hold meetings. We can't simply hope. We can't simply go to the polls or put initiatives on the ballot. None of these things are working. They are not working.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be some kind of mass resistance of a variety of things, and it has to be in ways that directly challenge power structures that are fucking us over and dragging us into, economically into default, politically into, mini Guantanamos and Pelican Bays and Santa Cruz County jails for drug wars. I mean, marijuana busts are up. At least they were a year ago. I don't know what the last year
is. And that kind of direct action is really only effective when you have the numbers to support them.
But you don't know when that's going to happen. I mean, who could have predicted that in Tunisia there would be such an uprising? I don't know. I mean,
it's interesting that in all these seemingly Islamic and repressive countries where you think that civil liberties have been constrained to the point where people really don't have them anymore, all of a sudden they've got tens of thousands of people out in the streets.
Risking their lives.
Risking their lives, absolutely.
This could be one of them.
Perhaps one of them right
maybe
here.
Maybe there's a call from, do you speak Arabic?
I do.
Well, let's find out.
Thank you.
All right. Steve is going to translate into Arabic. Hi, caller. How are you?
Hi, this is Heidi with Stop Smart Meters calling to give you an update.
Hey,
oh, great.
Heidi, we were just talking about the smart meter situation. Have you talked to the dumb Ryan Coonerty recently?
No, I personally haven't. Josh, have you spoken to Ryan Coonerty lately on this issue? Do we have an update on that regard? We personally have not.
You have the evil Josh there with you?
I do have the evil Josh there with me.
I commend him on his... Now, what's your name?
Heidi.
Heidi. I know I watched a video with Josh and another woman speaking quite eloquently on the subject on smartmeters.org. Is that what the website is?
Yeah, that's our website, stopsmartmeters.org.
Stopsmartmeters.org, right on. Yeah, I think Josh puts it very articulately, though I have no idea if his facts are accurate because I haven't researched them, but I intend to play some of that on Sunday on my show. But is there an update? Apparently some people are being hauled away by the county sheriffs.
Well, yes. I mean, despite the fact that we have an ordinance on the books, both in unincorporated county and in the city of Capitola, and of course the Wellington Installation Yard is at 38th Avenue and Portola in unincorporated county, and they are installing in unincorporated county. Despite all that, and despite the massive protests every morning at 38th and Portola, we meet there at 7:15, 7:30, and protest, the sheriff, instead of upholding the ordinance that's on the book, they are telling us that we will be arrested if we do not move. And several of us have been arrested for blocking trucks, trying to protect our community from this wireless assault, this assault on our civil liberties, on our privacy rights, on our health. And we've been arrested instead of arresting and citing the installers who are, again, installing illegally in the county.
What is the law that actually should be enforced by county and city authorities?
The actual ordinance number is...
I don't mean the ordinance number.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
well,
what does it say?
It's basically, it prohibits installation of smart meters in unincorporated areas of Santa Cruz County. And Capitola also has such an ordinance, and Watsonville also has such an ordinance. And as well as 13 other cities.
Is this a blanket prohibition, or does it say people can opt out, or what's the
story? It's a blanket prohibition.
Wow. And,
yeah.
And yet every day, more and more of these meters are being installed.
Oh, they're being installed daily. It's quite chilling, actually, to
be... Are you following them around and videotaping?
We have been following them, and we are encouraging people, if they do spot a Wellington truck in their neighborhood or while they're out and about, we encourage people not to engage with the Wellington worker. That's a waste of your time, but to go door-to-door and speak to your neighbors, let them know that the Wellington installer, let them know what they're doing, let them know that they have a right to tell that installer, I do not want a smart meter, and that the installer is trained to not install a meter. If he does install a meter when you have requested he not, then certainly the sheriff has said that they would write a citation for that.
Has that actually happened?
No, it hasn't happened, because what happens is they're going to people's homes while they're at work, and they're not even knocking on people's doors. Some people have had their computers actually fried because they shut power off to install these meters, and then they shut it back on, and when there's a power surge, some people's computers have actually been zapped.
Wow.
I'm not sure they're quite the right term for that. But
how many times has that happened, you know?
Well, I have one report from here in Scotts Valley where we're located, but certainly there's reports all over the country about appliances being zapped, so to speak.
Hi, Heidi. Steve Plates here.
Hi.
How you doing? One thing I was curious about, and my understanding is that Capitola did pass an ordinance and then went back into session, and the city council had determined they weren't going to enforce the ordinance. Did they ever explain to you what their reasoning was behind that?
They determined that they wouldn't make it a priority and that they would treat it on an individual as-needed basis. So, again, if somebody calls and says, I asked for no smart meter and they installed it anyway, they said that they would issue a citation in that case, but they won't actively go out into the community and stop installation.
Will they remove smart meters of people who request to have them removed?
You know, I only know of one case of someone having their smart meter removed, and it was years ago. It was long before the massive rollout. They really don't come off once they're on, which is why we encourage people to lock up their meters. There's examples on our website, stopsmartmeters.org. If you just type in defend your analog meter, you can see examples of how people have locked up their meters. But really the only way to ensure you don't get a smart meter at this point, because the PG&E in Wellington cannot be trusted, is to lock up your meter and to speak to your neighbors and defend your neighborhood, create a smart meter free zone. You know, we've already, now the installation has ramped up, they were going to install last summer, but our protests at the Wellington Yard at 38th and Portola kept them away for a year, and now they're back. They are installing en masse, and since they've been installing in the county, we've been hearing lots of reports. A woman actually had to spend the night in the hospital several days after her meter was installed. She's in intense pain. She was so agitated a lot of people report insomnia with this, and with her it was beyond insomnia. She said she just couldn't even rest, so she went to the hospital just to get rest. Another person had vomiting and unexplained black diarrhea the day that it was installed. So I think that these, unfortunately, these instances, as Santa Cruz County gets more smart meters, we're going to be hearing more of these reports. And unfortunately, our newspaper, print and news television media has not been giving this enough coverage. And so unfortunately, a lot of people aren't even aware that they can call the delay line. And in fact, I do have the number if people do want to call the delay line. It is not an opt-out. There's currently not an opt-out. But if they call the following number, they can be put on the delay list, and it will at least delay installation till September at the earliest. And can I give that number?
Please do.
It's 877-743-7378. 877-743-7378. And if you missed that, you can find that on our website, stopsmartmeters.org.
Heidi, let me ask you, I mean, if you certainly must have made some converts. I mean, Josh himself was a convert based upon his presentation that I saw the video he did.
Mm-hmm.
He previously thought, oh, you know, my girlfriend's...
I'm his girlfriend. I'm the one who converted him.
You got your tinfoil hat on there, Heidi. So you were just a wild and crazy, you know, who knows what. You know, with the UFOs again, Heidi? Okay, fine. Atlantis?
That's right.
Flat world theory, I suppose. Hollow Earth. In any case, certainly there are people who have been persuaded, have had smart meters installed. You must have had at least one person who's tried to have the meter removed. I mean, I can't believe, of all the people who have been involved in this and all the publicity, you have had at least one person who said, remove my damn meter.
Oh, absolutely. There are thousands of people.
And so what do they do?
They do nothing. They ignore these people. They make these people feel powerless. They take advantage of the elderly. They take advantage. I believe this is also a very sexist movement, because women are treated quite differently than men. Mm. They're using intimidation tactics. It's really appalling. They're telling people that they're going to cut off their power, et cetera, et cetera. But there are thousands of people demanding that their meters be removed right now, and PG&E is doing nothing.
Thousands of people in Capitola and the unincorporated.
I'm speaking in terms of California.
I mean, what I'm saying is, you have a law that says they can't install a meter,
right?
But the law doesn't say they have to remove the meter if the request is made.
Let me ask Josh.
Because that's really, that would be a key issue here, I think.
Well,
my understanding was that you asked to have it removed, they would remove it, but it's so delayed that, you know, justice delayed is justice denied kind of a thing.
Is this what the PG&E told you, or the what? Well,
that's my understanding.
You still there, Heidi?
I'm still there. I'm trying to, you know, as far as I know, the law is just prohibiting installation. I don't know anything about any law saying they have to remove it. But
See if you can find out more information. I do a show on Sunday if you decide you want to call in. I know you're also, I guess, going to be doing a community TV show on Sunday, right?
That's right. Yeah. I believe that we are going to be on community TV. I don't have
Great. Well, I'll see you there. Absolutely.
Awesome. And also, I want to mention we're going to be having an emergency town hall forum on August 3rd at the Loudoun Nelson Center between 7 and 9 p.m. So please come out to that. And everybody, please call the delay number, go to our website, get informed, inform your neighbors, and meet us at 38th and Portola every weekday morning to protest this illegal rollout
in
our community.
So they only do this on the weekdays?
As far as we know, yes. There has not been activity on the weekend. However, there's been reports. Oh, now I'm hearing Saturday. There's been reports in other areas in the state that they're installing.
So I've just heard from Steve and maybe Steve, you can clarify where you heard this from, is that it's not that the company won't remove the smart meters, but that it takes forever to get it done. Is that the problem?
They have not removed any smart meters, mm-hmm. nor have they said that they would remove any smart meters. I mean, I speak to people who feel like they're dying. I speak to people whose 85-year-old husbands are now incapacitated since the smart meter went in, and they used to garden and enjoy life, and now this woman is taking care of her husband 24 hours a day, and they're not removing these people's meters.
Have you considered getting some engineering assistance in helping people DIY meter removal?
Certainly. I mean, certainly they could find an electrical contractor to, and you can pick up an analog meter just about anywhere these days. You can find them at Real Goods. You can find them often at stores that sell electrical contractor equipment. And if you find an electrical contractor that you trust, certainly anyone anyone with the knowledge could easily do it. They go in about 2 minutes. They're very easy to install, so I imagine they're very easy to uninstall.
And that,
but PG&E is not going to be uninstalling these meters.
And that's not going to result in an interruption of your service in any way?
You know, I can't speak to that because I don't work for PG&E,
right.
But I don't believe that they have the legal right as of yet to shut off our power for refusing this program. No, they do not. Josh is saying
and
no.
And I don't want to suggest
they do
that
not
they do.
Have the legal right to shut off our power.
Right. So maybe what you need is a team of engineer, should we say, artists who hook up with your movement who will simply go around following the truck as it gets installed. You know, and then offer as a public service to remove it.
Wouldn't that be great? Certainly.
I mean, if your movement grows stronger and you get more people involved who have different skills, you might be able to do that, assuming that you're on the right track and not a tin hat kind of person.
Well, you know, even if you don't believe all of the growing evidence of the ill health effects that is caused by non-ionizing radiation, I mean, the World Health Organization recently classified non-ionizing radiation as a carcinogen. So even if you don't believe all that, there are plenty of other reasons to oppose smart meters. It's a complete greenwash. It's a 24-hour unauthorized search warrant in your home. I mean, a lot of people are calling them spy meters, and they certainly are that. You know, this whole thing is just so anti-democratic that 44 local governments in California can oppose this program and not have any rights and have, you know, PG&E and Wellington say, oh, we answer to the CPUC. I mean, this is so undemocratic, and there's, you know, just let's just oppose it on that alone.
Yeah,
this
it's is, a certainly an interesting way to characterize it.
It's an absolute violation of our civil liberties, and I personally think people should be outraged. I know I am.
Well, I know you've also, but Josh, perhaps under your evil leadership,
yes, indeed,
has talked about fire dangers and things of that sort.
Certainly, you know, there's been quite a few fires. If you look on our website, there are so many comments. It's quite a community, and there are people from Portland. There's a woman from Portland who just commented a few days ago. Her smart meter has exploded twice. You can just Google, there's exploding meters happening all over the place. The thing is, these are the same technology as a cell phone. And if you go pump gas, you'll see there's a sign there that says, do not talk on your phone while you pump gas, because there's this thing called arcing, and a spark can arc and ignite the fumes. So if you've got a gas leak and you've got a smart meter, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out the potential for disaster there. And it's important for us to remember that in these places like in San Bruno and other recent gas line explosions. These are areas where smart meters were fully installed. And while they won't tell us what sparked that horrible, horrible disaster in San Bruno, you know, it certainly is suspicious that this was an area that had smart meters. Given the dangers, given the growing evidence of fires, there was another fire in the Santa Rosa Mall that started at the meters. So while they're not coming out and saying it, I think it's pretty obvious. These are very unsafe.
I think that Josh and you, of course, as well, and his associate in the video, whose name you probably know but I've forgotten, that you can find on stopsmartmeters.org. It's worth giving a look to. Again, you know, it's always difficult for a person just approaching the subject. You probably had the same problem with Josh. You know, to not so much dismiss you as a tin hat woman, but rather to recognize, you know, I don't know. I haven't examined the data the way you have.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I have to do something of my own until I say, aha, or uh-uh, depending on, you know, or something in the middle. So I guess, you know, I would encourage people to, if they are persuaded by what you're saying and the videos they've seen, and I think they're pretty persuasive, at stopsmartmeters.org. Check out the scene at 7:30 in the morning out there at 38th and Portola. You sometimes get up early, Steve.
I've been out there several times. Yeah, now they've got it cleverly shrouded in curtains out there. So maybe they figured that was, well, maybe they don't see what we're doing. Maybe we'll be able to get away with it. But I think I urge everybody to get their smart meter free zone signs and put those up. And
absolutely. They can come pick up signs there. We're also at most of the area farmers markets. If people want to pick up, we've got these beautiful glossy signs that people can put in their neighborhood to show, like, this is a smart meter free zone. They are not welcome here.
And I've seen those all over. And,
all right.
And that's terrific.
Well, Uncle Dennis will now give a strong defense of smart meters during his show.
I have no defense for smart
meters.
Uh-oh,
he has no defense.
There you go.
We've got to get a defender. Maybe we can
another
get a local PG&E person will come in and give us all the hype.
Great.
Listen, Heidi, thank you for calling in. Again, maybe you want to check out the prison protest on Saturday at noon, where you might be able to kind of hook up with people who are, you know, fighting to stop torture in the prisons and the, you know, the Pelican Bay
maximum security stuff that's that has the hunger strike throughout the state, actually throughout the country. And that's happening at noon on Saturday. You're having, you know, your own, is there a council meeting coming up on this issue? I think there is one coming up on Tuesday. Is that right?
But I'm not certain their address. You can speak at Oral Communications, of course, but I don't think they're addressing any smart meters. The city of Santa Cruz hasn't taken a position on it.
There was an email I got about a city council meeting issue around this, but I don't know what it is. I'll be back on Sunday and talking about it some more. You're welcome to call in again with updates. I was going to ask you who's been arrested, what's going on with that, but I don't have any time. It's 8 o'clock, and I've got to go. But feel free to call back, ditto with Josh. I believe, Steve, you'd like to make contact with Josh at some point.
Yes, I would. I'd be very interested in what's going on.
If you want, give Josh Steve's phone number, 334-8692.
Great.
And the two of them can get together, and we can all wear tin hats, by cracky.
You guys keep up the good work. We really appreciate what you're doing, and we'll do whatever we can to support you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks for having us.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye. And that's the story from the smart guys here at Free Radio.
Because
Santa
I believe
Cruz.
Now that we're going to be going from the cream
to the dregs. That's correct. Actually, it'll be from the dregs to the cream if Uncle Dennis has anything to say about it. He's been away. Now he's back, so beware. He no longer has to worry about me since I've been convicted and my appeal has been turned down. Last phone call. Hey there. What is it, caller? We don't have much time. Go ahead.
I just want to know if you were opposed to microwave ovens.
I'm a great user of microwave ovens, but I'm probably a foolish user if there is a connection. Although I understand there's a difference in the spiking of the PG&E smart meters
and
microwave
ovens. You're opposed
ovens.
To Wi-Fi.
But I've got to get off the air, Uncle Bob,
networks.
Because I have to go. We have Uncle Dennis about to blast me out with a questionable
60s music. If it's true, it's true across the board.
I'll let you and Uncle Dennis thrash this out. You take
care
of it.
Take it easy.
All right.
Another time.
All right, man. Bye-bye. That's it for Free Radio. Thanks for being with me. I will be back again on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning. Steve Plach may be dragged in, but probably not. And maybe Heidi will be back. We'll see what's cooking. Talk to you then. Meantime, 423-4833, and I'll get back to you. Thanks.